responding to the dictates of an ambiance which it had never before experienced. That which I could call myself seemed to be contracting, condensing, shrinking from the stale, customary boundaries of the flesh, whose perimeter knew only the modulation of the nerve ends. And the more substantial, the more solid the core of me became, the more delicate and extravagant appeared the close, palpable reality out of which I was being squeezed. In the measure that I became more and more metallic, in the same measure the scene before my eyes became inflated. The state of tension was so finely drawn now that the introduction of a single foreign particle, even a microscopic particle, as I say, would have shattered everything. For the fraction of a second, perhaps, I experienced that utter clarity which the epileptic, it is said, is given to know. In that moment, I lost completely the illusion of time and space. The world unfurled its drama simultaneously along a meridian which had no axis. In this sort of hair-trigger eternity, I felt that everything was justified, supremely justified. I felt the wars inside me that had left behind this pulp and rack. I felt the crimes that were seething here to emerge tomorrow in blatant screamers. I felt the misery that was grinding itself out with pestle and mortar, the long, dull misery that dribbles away in dirty handkerchiefs. On the meridian of time, there is no injustice. There is only the poetry of motion creating the illusion of truth and drama. If at any moment anywhere one comes face to face with the absolute, that great sympathy which makes men like Gautama and Jesus seem divine freezes away. The monstrous thing is not that men have created roses out of this dung heap, but that for some reason or other they should want roses. For some reason or other, man looks for the miracle, and to accomplish it, he will wade through blood. He will debauch himself with ideas. He will reduce himself to a shadow if for only 1 second of his life he can close his eyes to the hideousness of reality. Everything is endured. Disgrace, humiliation, poverty, war, crime, ennui, in the belief that overnight something will occur, a miracle, which will render life tolerable. And all the while a meter is running inside, and there is no hand that can reach in there and shut it off. All the while someone is eating the bread of life and drinking the wine, some dirty fat cockroach of a priest who hides away in the cellar guzzling it, while up above in the light of the street a phantom host touches the lips and the blood is pale as water. And out of the endless torment and misery no miracle comes forth, no microscopic vestige even of relief. Only ideas. Pale, attenuated ideas which have to be fattened by slaughter, ideas which come forth like bile, like the guts of a pig when the carcass is ripped open. And so I think what a miracle it would be if this miracle which man attends eternally should turn out to be nothing more than these two enormous turds which the faithful disciple dropped in the bidet. What if at the last moment, when the banquet table is set and the cymbals clash, there should appear suddenly and wholly without warning a silver platter on which even the blind could see that there is nothing more and nothing less than two enormous lumps of shit? That, I believe, would be more miraculous than anything which man has looked forward to. It would be miraculous because it would be undreamed of. It would be more miraculous than even the wildest dream because anybody could imagine the possibility, but nobody ever has, and probably nobody ever again will. Somehow the realization that nothing was to be hoped for had a salutary effect upon me. For weeks and months, for years in fact, all my life I had been looking forward to something happening, some extrinsic event that would alter my life, and now suddenly, inspired by the absolute hopelessness of everything, I felt relieved, felt as though a great burden had been lifted from my shoulders. At dawn, I parted company with the young Hindu, after touching him for a few francs, enough for a room. Walking down Montparnasse, I decided to let myself drift with the tide, to make not the least resistance to fate, no matter in what form it presented itself. Nothing that had happened to me thus far had been sufficient to destroy me. Nothing had been destroyed except my illusions. I myself was intact. The world was intact. Tomorrow there might be a revolution, a plague, an earthquake. Tomorrow there might not be left a single soul to whom one could turn for sympathy, for aid, for faith. It seemed to me that the great calamity had already manifested itself, that I could be no more truly alone than at this very moment. I made up my mind that I would hold on to nothing, that I would expect nothing, that henceforth I would live as an animal, a beast of prey, a rover, a plunderer. Even if war were declared and it were my lot to go, I would grab the bayonet and plunge it up to the hilt. And if rape were the order of the day, then rape I would, and with a vengeance. At this very moment, in the quiet dawn of a new day, was not the earth giddy with crime and distress? Had one single element of man's nature been altered, vitally, fundamentally altered by the incessant march of history? By what he calls the better part of his nature, man has been betrayed, that is all. At the extreme limits of his spiritual being, man finds himself again naked as a savage. When he finds God, as it were, he has been picked clean. He is a skeleton. One must burrow into life again in order to put on flesh. The word must become flesh. The soul thirsts. On whatever crumb my eye fastens, I will pounce and devour. If to live is the paramount thing, then I will live, even if I must become a cannibal. Heretofore, I have been trying to save my precious hide, trying to preserve the few pieces of meat that hid my bones. I am done with that. I have reached the limits of endurance. My back is to the wall. I can retreat no further. As far as history goes, I am dead. If there is something beyond, I shall have to bounce back. I have found God, but he is insufficient. I am only spiritually dead. Physically, I am alive. Morally, I am free. The world which I have departed is a menagerie. The dawn is breaking on a new world, a jungle world in which the lean spirits roam with sharp claws. If I am a hyena, I am a lean and hungry one. I go forth to fatten myself. At 1:30, I called on Van Norden, as per agreement. He had warned me that if he didn't answer, it would mean that he was sleeping with someone, probably his Georgia cunt. Anyway, there he was, tucked away comfortably, but with an air of weariness, as usual. He wakes up cursing himself, or cursing the job, or cursing life. He wakes up utterly bored and discomfited, chagrined to think that he did not die overnight. I sit down by the window and give him what encouragement I can. It is tedious work. One has to actually coax him out of bed. Mornings, he means by mornings anywhere between 1 and 5 p.m., mornings, as I say, he gives himself up to reveries. Mostly it is about the past he dreams, about his cunts. He endeavors to recall how they felt, what they said to him at certain critical moments, where he laid them, and so on. And as he lies there, grinning and cursing, he manipulates his fingers in that curious, bored way of his, as though to convey the impression that his disgust is too great for words. Over the bedstead hangs a douchebag which he keeps for emergencies, for the virgins whom he tracks down like a sleuth. Even after he has slept with one of these mythical creatures, he will still refer to her as a virgin, and almost never by name. "My virgin," he will say, just as he says, "my Georgia cunt." When he goes to the toilet, he says, "If my Georgia cunt calls, tell her to wait. Say I said so. And listen, you can have her if you like. I'm tired of her." He takes a squint at the weather and heaves a deep sigh. If it's rainy, he says, "God damn this fucking climate. It makes one morbid." And if the sun is shining brightly, he says, "God damn that fucking sun. It makes you blind." As he starts to shave, he suddenly remembers that there is no clean towel. "God damn this fucking hotel. They're too stingy to give you a clean towel every day." No matter what he does or where he goes, things are out of joint. Either it's the fucking country or the fucking job, or else it's some fucking cunt who's put him on the blink. "My teeth are all rotten," he says, gargling his throat. "It's the fucking bread they give you to eat here." He opens his mouth wide and pulls his lower lip down. "See that? Pulled out 6 teeth yesterday. Soon I'll have to get another plate. That's what you get working for a living. When I was on the bum, I had all my teeth. My eyes were bright and clear. Look at me now. It's a wonder I can make a cunt anymore. Jesus, what I'd like is to find some rich cunt, like that cute little prick, Carl. Did he ever show you the letters she sends him? Who is she? Do you know? He wouldn't tell me her name, the bastard. He's afraid I might take her away from him." He gargles his throat again and then takes a long look at the cavities. You're lucky, he says ruefully. You've got friends, at least. I haven't anybody, except that cute little prick who drives me bats about his rich cunt. Listen, he says. Do you happen to know a cunt by the name of Norma? She hangs around the dome all day. I think she's queer. I had her up here yesterday, tickling her ass. She wouldn't let me do a thing. I had her on the bed. I even had her drawers off. And then I got disgusted. Jesus, I can't bother struggling that way anymore. It isn't worth it. Either they do or they don't. It's foolish to waste time wrestling with them. While you're struggling with a little bitch like that, there may be a dozen cunts on the terrace just dying to be laid. It's a fact. They all come over here to get laid. They think it's sinful here, the poor boobs. Some of these school teachers from out west, they're honestly virgins. I mean it. They sit around on their can all day thinking about it. You don't have to work over them very much. They're dying for it. I had a married woman the other day who told me she hadn't had a lay for 6 months. Can you imagine that? Jesus, she was hot. I thought she'd tear the cock off me. And groaning all the time. Do you? Do you? She kept saying that all the time like she was nuts. And do you know what that bitch wanted to do? She wanted to move in here. Imagine that, asking me if I loved her. I didn't even know her name. I never know their names. I don't want to. The married ones. Christ, if you saw all the married cunts I bring up here, you'd never have any more illusions. They're worse than the virgins, the married ones. They don't wait for you to start things. They fish it out for you themselves. And then they talk about love afterwards. It's disgusting. I tell you, I'm actually beginning to hate cunt. He looks out the window again. It's drizzling. It's been drizzling this way for the last 5 days. Are we going to the dome, Joe? I call him Joe because he calls me Joe. When Carl is with us, he is Joe too. Everybody is Joe because it's easier that way. It's also a pleasant reminder not to take yourself too seriously. Anyway, Joe doesn't want to go to the dome. He owes too much money there. He wants to go to the Coupole. Wants to take a little walk first around the block. But it's raining, Joe. I know, but what the hell? I've got to have my constitutional. I've got to wash the dirt out of my belly. When he says this, I have the impression that the whole world is wrapped up there inside his belly, and that it's rotting there. As he's putting on his things, he falls back again into a semi-comatose state. He stands there with one arm in his coat sleeve and his hat on assways, and he begins to dream aloud about the Riviera, about the sun, about lazing one's life away. All I ask of life, he says, is a bunch of books, a bunch of dreams, and a bunch of cunt. As he mumbles this meditatively, he looks at me with the softest, the most insidious smile. Do you like that smile? He says. And then, disgustedly, Jesus, if I could only find some rich cunt to smile at that way. Only a rich cunt can save me now, he says with an air of utmost weariness. One gets tired of chasing after new cunts all the time. It gets mechanical. The trouble is, you see, I can't fall in love. I'm too much of an egoist. Women only help me to dream, that's all. It's a vice, like drink or opium. I've got to have a new one every day. If I don't, I get morbid. I think too much. Sometimes I'm amazed at myself, how quick I pull it off, and how little it really means. I do it automatically, like. Sometimes I'm not thinking about a woman at all, but suddenly I notice a woman looking at me, and then, bango, it starts all over again. Before I know what I'm doing, I've got her up to the room. I don't even remember what I say to them. I bring them up to the room, give them a pat on the ass, and before I know what it's all about, it's over. It's like a dream. Do you know what I mean? He hasn't much use for the French girls. Can't stand them. Either they want money, or they want you to marry them. At bottom, they're all whores. I'd rather wrestle with a virgin, he says. They give you a little illusion. They put up a fight, at least. Just the same, as we glance over the terrace, there is hardly a whore in sight whom he hasn't fucked at some time or other. Standing at the bar, he points them out to me, one by one, goes over them, anatomically, describes their good points and their bad. They're all frigid, he says, and then begins to mold his hands, thinking of the nice, juicy virgins who are just dying for it. In the midst of his reveries, he suddenly arrests himself, and grabbing my arm excitedly, he points to a whale of a woman who is just lowering herself into a seat. There's my Danish cunt, he grunts. See that ass? Danish. How that woman loves it. She just begs me for it. Come over here. Look at her now from the side. Look at that ass, will you? It's enormous. I tell you, when she climbs over me, I can hardly get my arms around it. It blots out the whole world. She makes me feel like a little bug crawling inside her. I don't know why I fall for her. I suppose it's that ass. It's so incongruous-like. And the creases in it. You can't forget an ass like that. It's a fact. A solid fact. The others, they may bore you or they may give you a moment's illusion, but this one, with her ass, zowie, you can't obliterate her. It's like going to bed with a monument on top of you. The Danish cunt seems to have electrified him. He's lost all his sluggishness now. His eyes are popping out of his head, and of course one thing reminds him of another. He wants to get out of the fucking hotel because the noise bothers him. He wants to write a book, too, so as to have something to occupy his mind. But then, the goddamned job stands in the way. It takes it out of you, that fucking job. I don't want to write about Montparnasse. I want to write my life, my thoughts. I want to get the dirt out of my belly. Listen, get that one over there. I had her a long time ago. She used to be down near Les Halles. A funny bitch. She lay on the edge of the bed and pulled her dress up. Ever tried that way? Not bad. She didn't hurry me either. She just lay back and played with her hat while I slugged away at her. And when I come, she says sort of bored-like, "Are you through?" Like it didn't make any difference at all. Of course it doesn't make any difference. I know that goddamn well. But the cold-blooded way she had, I sort of liked it. It was fascinating, you know? When she goes to wipe herself, she begins to sing. Going out of the hotel, she was still singing. Didn't even say au revoir. Walks off swinging her hat and humming to herself like, "That's a whore for you. A good lay, though. I think I liked her better than my virgin." There's something depraved about screwing a woman who doesn't give a fuck about it. It heats your blood. And then, after a moment's meditation, "Can you imagine what she'd be like if she had any feelings?" "Listen," he says, "I want you to come to the club with me tomorrow afternoon. There's a dance on." "I can't tomorrow, Joe. I promised to help Carl out." "Listen, forget that prick. I want you to do me a favor. It's like this." He commences to mold his hands again. "I've got a cunt lined up. She promised to stay with me on my night off. But I'm not positive about her yet. She's got a mother, you see? Some shit of a painter. She chews my ear off every time I see her. I think the truth is the mother's jealous. I don't think she'd mind so much if I gave her a lay first. You know how it is. Anyway, I thought maybe you wouldn't mind taking the mother. She's not so bad. If I hadn't seen the daughter, I might have considered her myself. The daughter's nice and young, fresh-like, you know what I mean? There's a clean smell to her." "Listen, Joe, you'd better find somebody else." "Ah, don't take it like that. I know how you feel about it. It's only a little favor I'm asking you to do for me." "I don't know how to get rid of the old hen. I thought first I'd get drunk and ditch her, but I don't think the young one'd like that. They're sentimental-like. They come from Minnesota or somewhere. Anyway, come around tomorrow and wake me up, will you? Otherwise, I'll oversleep. And besides, I want you to help me find a room. You know I'm helpless. Find me a room in a quiet street somewhere near here. I've got to stay around here. I've got credit here. Listen, promise me you'll do that for me. I'll buy you a meal now and then. Come around anyway, because I go nuts talking to these foolish cunts. I want to talk to you about Havelock Ellis. Jesus, I've had the book out for 3 weeks now and I haven't looked at it. You sort of rot here. Would you believe it? I've never been to the Louvre, nor to the Comédie Française. Is it worth going to these joints? Still, it sort of takes your mind off things, I suppose. What do you do with yourself all day? Don't you get bored? What do you do for a lay? Listen, come here. Don't run away yet. I'm lonely. Do you know something? If this keeps up another year, I'll go nuts. I've got to get out of this fucking country. There's nothing for me here. I know it's lousy now in America, but just the same. You go queer over here. All these cheap shits sitting on their ass all day bragging about their work, and none of them is worth a stinking damn. They're all failures. That's why they come over here. Listen, Joe, don't you ever get homesick? You're a funny guy. You seem to like it over here. What do you see in it? I wish you'd tell me. I wish to Christ I could stop thinking about myself. I'm all twisted up inside. It's like a knot in there. Listen, I know I'm boring the shit out of you, but I've got to talk to someone. I can't talk to those guys upstairs. You know what those bastards are like. They all take a byline, and Carl, the little prick, he's so goddamn selfish. I'm an egotist, but I'm not selfish. There's a difference. I'm a neurotic, I guess. I can't stop thinking about myself. It isn't that I think myself so important. I simply can't think about anything else, that's all. If I could fall in love with a woman, that might help.